This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Break It Up by Rilo Kiley, a band that's back out and doing some touring this summer. Wouldn't mind trying to see them if I can. But Are We Breaking Up? To me, is the question Jenny Lewis asks in that song of her lover, I guess, and I think the key question to begin the Grizzlies' summer.
So we played the Drew asked Zach Kleiman if he still believes in the Big Three, and then we played the complete answer. It was about 6 minutes.
A couple answers like that, and one of them was not from Drew's question. It was some other question, and I was the one holding the microphone waiting to and he talked for like 7 minutes straight and just kept going. I was just like, come on, man. That's why I asked two questions.
Because
I knew the mic wasn't going to come back to me again.
What did you just make of the way that he answered these questions?
Yeah, I apologize for my voice and the occasional coughing that might ensue. I thought what was most notable was how non-committal he was about keeping the core of the team together. And that's why I wrote what I wrote. I think there were multiple signals. You listen for repeated languages from when it comes to the players are different, but when it comes to the GM and the coach in these situations, especially with the Grizzlies, because they are prepared about the messages they do and don't want to get out, I listen for repeated language. I listen for what things does Kleiman repeat himself, mm-hmm. and what are commonalities between what Kleiman says and what the coach says, right? And so on the Kleiman front, there was a lot of like repetition of we're not good enough, we weren't close, we have to be open-minded about what we do, tough conversations. You start putting all that together, and I'm not saying they're going to break up this core, but I'm saying it's very possible that they break up this core. It's clear to me that is not off the table whatsoever.
You then went through it, and I'd urge people to read your column because it's very thoughtful, as it always is, but the challenge with that is you'll hear a lot of people say, break it up, blow it up, run it back, whatever else.
Easy to talk about.
And as you go through the players one by one,
It's
hard to believe that you could get better by trading any of them.
It is my belief, and this is where I land in what I wrote. It is my belief, and my mind could change if you present me a deal that I don't personally envision, right? But I've done the exercise on all three of them. I've like gone through like the whole league and like, what can happen here.
Trades.
Right.
Yeah.
It is my belief that it's not like, this is not something that lands you as an obvious championship contender. I don't think that path exists.
Right.
I hate to break it to people. But logic to me suggests that the best thing for all parties involved, meaning the Grizzlies and the players, is to all be committed to each other and to keep the three together, try to improve the supporting cast through a combination. And I think it will require both a combination of internal improvement, which is there to be had, and some changes. And then hope your coaching change has an effect like it did with Cleveland, which I've been talking about since the beginning of the season, is to have all that come together and to be a team that looks up and you're winning 55 games next year and you think you got a shot, which I think is it's very, very possible that would happen. That is what I think should happen, but I don't know if that will happen because I don't know if that's what all the parties want. There are other external pressures. I don't know.
I think those are the two things that are interesting about this is that one could be, I think you're right. Like if you were just moving into another city without this history or else, and you just had this team with a better Zach Edey and a better Jalen
Wells. This is all the stuff you have to work with. What do you want to do with it? I think that's what you do with it.
You feel great about it, and you feel just keep it together and at the margins try to get a backup point guard and whatever else.
Right.
So, but there are two things that could be working against it. One is, as you point out, we don't know that all three players want to be here. right? Or one, like, well, that's part of it. And then the second is there some external branding pressure to do something different?
Right. That's right. I think good things have a way of souring over time when they don't become great things. And that's right. sort of part of it. Like internally with fans, whatever, you can be good for a while. And if you're just good and you're not, it sort of loses its oomph a little bit. So I think there is that, you know, concern about sort of staleness setting in. I think, you know, if we say, like, did Taylor Jenkins' voice, you know, wear out after 6 years? Like, does a relationship about, you know, do you need to, do you need to shake things up? Because sometimes you just need to shake things up. I think that's possibly true. And then, again, you wonder about, you know, Jaron's got the contract thing. There's been all kinds of stuff. If you listen to national podcasts, people, I get annoyed because the default tone of national NBA podcasts, and they're not all guilty of this, but the default tone, and the TV stuff is worse, but I listen mostly to the pods. The default tone is either like knowingly snarky or snarkily knowing, however you want to phrase it, right? And I get kind of annoyed, but there's a lot of that. Well, just wait till this summer. It could be a big summer for the Grizzlies. There's a lot of that kind of stuff, right. And people sort of half know things or think they know things or whatever. And so I just think there's a lot of stuff there to be sorted out. And as Zach Kleiman said, you know, we're going to digest it and we're going to take some time. And, you know, he didn't make a lot of promises. Now, I thought he was stronger on – he was complimentary of all three of the core players.
Right.
But he stopped short of saying, we believe we can win big with this trio and we are keeping them together. He did not say that.
No, he did not say that.
Notably, I thought he was strongest on Morant, where he said, you know, we believe Ja can be the leader of this team going forward, right? And then when Drew asked him, you know, he didn't restate, I won't trade Ja, but Drew basically asked him, is what you said earlier this season still holding? He said, right. Yes, right? And he said, I mean, he did at one point when prompted say, you know, Jaron's a priority or whatever, but it, there was not a full throated, like we're keeping this together. It was interesting. You could sort of break down the roster into three components based on the way he talked about it, which is the score three or the three best players, but there's other stuff involved and you're not 100% sure keeping it together. There's these young players who are in good contracts who he's really into. Edie, he specifically mentioned Edie, Pippen, Wells and Cam Spencer.
Yeah.
He did not mention in that context Vince Williams or Gigi Jackson or, and he mentioned Santi Aldama at all. And that was on my list of things to ask him and time ran out.
Right.
But he did not mention Santi Aldama at all. So then you have these other players who like just sort of are notable by their omission from when he's going on these 6 minute tangents talking about the team.
Right.
It doesn't occur to him to talk about Santi Aldama and Luke Kennard and Brandon Clark and Gigi Jackson and some of these other guys, right? And you can read into that.
Yeah, he talked about Gigi and Vince. That was when he was talking about the trade deadline.
Right.
You asked him about what mistake had he made over the last year,
yeah.
And he settled on Jake LaRavia, which is really twofold, not extending him. And then he said,
"Well, he said the mistake was, but I guess it is twofold, right? Yeah,
yeah." And then he said separately, for the future, it made sense to trade him at the trade deadline, but boy, we could have used him.
Yeah,
yeah, is sort of what he said there. So in terms of the. I mean, of course, the other reason that the big three, the other reason to quote unquote, is that they're going to be increasingly expensive for a level of achievement,
right?
So, you know.
So to me, part of the Jaron thing is you got to stipulate to me what's the, if your thing is we are keeping Jaron, well, I don't know what the pot of gold is at the end of the rainbow for him, right? And so a $240 million Jaron and a $350 million Jaron, and those are sort of the two poles, right? It's not going to be more than 350 because it can't be. I don't think it's going to be less than 240. And so, like, I have entirely different opinions about the future based upon those two numbers, or maybe it's somewhere in between, right?
You think there is a...
I'm a big Jaron guy, but I'm not a $350 million Jaron guy.
You would sooner move on than pay him $350 million.
I would seriously entertain it. I don't know. To me, that level of contract for a player who is not a clear top five, top six superstar player is a recipe for regret for everybody, for any team and any player pretty much, right? It's almost always a bad contract.
And you could get value for him because he's an extraordinary player and...
Well, a couple problems there.
What?
One, he's an impending free agent, so there's a level... Right. If you trade him this summer, the team getting him, they can assume they're going to whatever, but there's a level of uncertainty there, and plus they're going to have to pay him too.
Right.
And then because his contract is a huge bargain right now, yeah. It's hard to match equally, right? His cap figure next season is $23 million. So if you start thinking about, like, I'll just make up some joking stuff, right? Like, Tomas Isolo is Finnish, right? He's even mentioned like the great Finnish player Lauri Markkanen.
Right.
Good young player, same position. Hey, Jaren, Lauri Markkanen makes twice as much money next year as Jaren, so you can't trade.
It doesn't work.
Right. You got to add other stuff. Right? You can add other stuff to trade Jaren for a lesser player, right? Like you could, like, what, you know, if you really want to roll the dice, what do you want to do with Jaren for Zion Williamson trade? Well, guess what? Zion Williamson makes like 1.6 times the amount of money that Jaren does. And so that, you know, it's hard to trade him for players of his stature because players of his stature make a lot more money than he does.
You mentioned, and we'll talk about this all week, I'm certain, because, but
all month,
all summer.
Yeah.
One of the things you mentioned was, oh, well, maybe they could take Desmond Bane and break that contract up into two.
Like, that's a maybe.
Good luck finding that.
I don't know. It's a maybe. I think the problem with Bane, and I sort of wrote this in the column without getting into like fake trade details, is he's really good. But he's like one of the best versions of one of the least valuable player types in the league. By which I mean scoring guard. If you took the five positions and ranked them in terms of, you know, like in football, people, it's like quarterback and left tackle or whatever.
Right.
If you think about that in basketball, which is not as rigidly positional, but to some degree, like the least valuable position type, scoring guard is the least.
Right.
And he is a single position scoring guard, and he is not the kind of scoring guard whose ball skills are such that you can build your offense around him. Like maybe Devin Booker at his best is that, right? Dwayne Wade was that.
Right.
He's not that. He's more of a, like, you know, he's not as good as Ray Allen, but more of a Ray Allen type, right? Ray Allen wasn't going to be your number one guy on a title team, even though he's a Hall of Famer, right? He had to play off of other guys who had more diverse skills, like a Kevin Garnett and a Paul Pierce or whatever. That's sort of Bane. And that works in the context of having John Moran and Jaren Jackson, because they have the more variable skills.
Right.
But when you're trying to trade a guy who's making $36 million, I think, next season and goes up into the 40s, and he is a really good scoring guard, and that is all he is. He is just a scoring guard. There's a limit to the value in that.
What did you make about what he did? He said literally nothing about Isolo. He said, I haven't thought about it. So, and then Isolo obviously was talked about it. Do you believe he will be back, and do you believe he should be back?
I wonder to some degree how tied that's going to be. And let me be clear, I am spitballing here. Which many people, when they start yapping, are spitballing. And you got to guess, are they spitballing? I'm spitballing, I'm telling
right,
you.
Right.
I wonder how tied that is to the Morant situation. Because I thought it was notable. Every player who was asked about Isolo was complimentary of Isolo. And I think not in a just going through the motions way.
Right.
Bane was, Jaren was, Edie really was, Pippen really was. I think those two things are notable. Kennard, who's not coming back, was. But Ja, I think, had the strongest stuff on Isolo that was like that went off of what he had to say into the voluntary, right?
Like, he's the word exciting.
He never said that about Taylor Jenkins, even when he was complimenting him, right? So I think Ja likes Isolo. I think Ja likes the way that Isolo approaches the game, which I think caters to Ja. And I think I suspect that if Ja is back, which I think Ja will be back, that Isolo will be the coach. And so, yes, I think Isolo is going to be the coach. But if something happens with Ja and the team like goes in some radically different direction, I don't know about that.
What did you think of Isolo's – some of his in-game coaching was a little iffy?
It was a mixed bag. I sort of cited early on, I think he handled foul stuff better than Taylor Jenkins, or better than most coaches do, and that's an in-game thing. I think clearly he and his staff, even though he pushed back on a question about this after game 3, I guess, or maybe game 4 – did not handle coaches' challenges very well.
Right.
I thought, you know, they lost two close games at home, and one of those, like they lost a play-in game where they had a 5-second violation on the inbounds. Well, so was that Santi Aldama's fault? Was that player's fault? Was that a poor play construction?
Right.
Like, whatever, you're the coach. You know, you have a last-second shot situation and ends up with John Conchar taking the shot when Scottie Pippen's on the bench. There's questionable stuff there. But I do think, and Luke Kennard actually had a quote I thought was interesting about this. I think his approach to game from a larger strategic standpoint, not like big picture of my team, but like this game, I thought was pretty good in the sense, and Luke Kennard talked about, like, he's a guy who really thinks about the matchups in a game. I think he had a good game plan for playing the Thunder, even with all the problems the Grizzlies had. I think that game plan evolved in a positive way over the series. I think there was a lot of a lot of adjustment, counter adjustment with Jaren, and I think there was good adjustments that happened there. There were then counter adjustments, and then the series ended. So right. Who knows what the next thing would have been? I think the very specific hyper, like, you know, react on the fly to this specific play call, this coach's challenge. Some of that was shaky, but I think his like thinking about the game strategically was actually pretty good.
Well, it was interesting. You pointed out they had some things figured out against Oklahoma City, and the Josh said it. Like Josh said,
right.
And what's interesting, Josh said,
getting beat up by this quote already. But
what's funny is Josh sometimes can sound reflexively defensive in it because he said, "I know this is going to go viral, but I figured things out, and it could have been." And he was just telling the truth. Doesn't mean they would have definitely been 2-2, but like they had figured some things out, and he had.
I got no problem saying that if John doesn't get injured, they win game three. To me, that is almost crystal clear that they win game three.
Yes.
And I think they probably win game two, although that's a little uncertain. Like, yeah, like it's a nip and tuck game, and John's not playing. Maybe John plays.
Who knows?
Who knows? But I think there's a good chance they win that game. And then I think there's a good chance they lose in six. But the idea that it would have been 2-2 going back to Oklahoma City if John doesn't get hurt, to me, that is not remotely a stretch. And I do think, and I wrote this in the series, I think they did figure out what they needed to do to compete with them. Now, they couldn't sustain it without Ja, but they did. And this is why I was getting to that with Isla. Yeah. He figured out the way we have to play against this team. Like, I think he figured that out over the course of the series.
I did think in the answer originally, in his first answer to Drew's question, he brought up, he said, we got unintentionally young. And he said, I don't know who needs to hear this. We got unintentionally young.
Yeah, that's another like self-conscious about the criticism.
And then the dogs. Those two things. He wasn't asked about dogs or toughness.
Right,
he wasn't asked about youth. And he answered them anyway. Like, that's
and Isla also, this is when I was talking about like listening to the commonalities. The one commonality between what Isla said and what Kleiman said was like, you know, this city responds to gritty players. And
right.
So I think they're self-conscious about some of the fan apathy. And they're self-conscious about that the team does need to be tougher. And trying to tie those two things together. And that seems clear to me an organizational talking point.
Yeah. You can read Chris's piece over at the Daily Memphian, and I'm sure he'll be writing about this all week. We will be talking about it all week. We got to take a break. Back in a moment. It is Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Jeff Calkins Show. Appreciate having Chris on. Busy day here on the Jeff Calkins Show. I do want to remind you, this would be a great time to get to O'Call. I'm actually speaking at a luncheon today. And so... So I went to the closet and I picked out my O'Call sport coat and a nice, beautiful button down I have from O'Call that I recently took in to get tailored because the sleeves were just a smidge too long. And that's the beautiful thing about O'Call. It's just one of the beautiful things about O'Call is you walk on in there and if you need alterations done, they have the people who've been working for them for forever, working with them for forever, right there on site. You go up, you come upstairs. Honestly, it feels like Santa's workshop, only it's your clothes. It's a great time to get to O'Call. Spring and summer merchandise is in full bloom. So whether you need performance polos, they've got stunning cotton polos from Peter Millar and all your favorites. They've got the Brack slacks. I seriously would urge you to try them. They are the most comfortable pants that I have ever worn in my life. But wherever you're heading this summer, whether it's to the backyard or to the beach, get yourself ready with a trip to Oak Hall. All right, George. So we've been so caught up in the Grizzlies, we have not discussed the draft in great depth. Obviously, it is kind of amazing. Cam Ward, number one pick of the draft to the Tennessee Titans, barely mentioned. Like, you know,
yeah,
barely mentioned, and obviously overshadowed by the Shedeur Sanders story. What is your theory? When I was talking to Gabe on his show last week, he asked me what I thought this was all about. And I said, well, it's a combination of things. It's his tools. He's just not a physically overwhelming toolsy quarterback. And then it's the other stuff too. And Gabe was, yeah, it's the tools. That's what it is. It's the tools. It's not this other nonsense. And I guess I would say that I think it's pretty clear that if he were an electric physical prospect, the other stuff wouldn't have mattered. And if he, you know, and he certainly would have tools that knock your socks off, he would not have slipped as far as he did. But to me, the tools explain why he you know, would have slipped from the first to the second or the third round, right? Then that would have made sense. He's not an electric quarterback, but he's very productive. Whatever else, we'll take him in the second or third round. I think the reason that he fell as far as he did clearly had to do with, we'll just loosely call it, the other stuff. I don't think you can explain him falling as far as he did based purely on his physical limitations. The other stuff had to have played a big role. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Like, honestly, to me, based on what he does on the field and what he's shown us in his, you know, handful of years in college, the accuracy is there. Yes, he might be a little bit lacking in terms of arm, just pure arm talent, but we've seen quarterbacks work beyond that. But with those limitations, something else has to give for him to go below some of these other quarterbacks, which for me, that's the bigger story for me. Isn't, okay, Shador is slipping. It's, why are these teams picking some of these other quarterbacks? Because for me, especially just based on injury history and age, I don't see how a guy like a Tyler Shuck or a Dillon Gabriel is a better prospect.
Well, Tyler Shuck is more toolsy, so he's injured, but he is more toolsy. That's why.
He's also my age.
He's also your age. You're 26. Is he 26? Is that what he is?
He's going to be 26 September.
He was a high school rival of Brock Purdy's and goes to New Orleans. And, the idea that Dillon Gabriel, also not toolsy, would be drafted ahead of him is kind of nuts. So that's very clearly true. So what's interesting is, and you had Shador Sanders saying he could have done the pre-draft process, done a better job with the pre-draft process. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear folks talking about what he did or didn't do. Shador Sanders could have, but didn't compete at the Senior Bowl. Jackson Dart did. Shador Sanders did not, but could have thrown at the combine. Jackson Dart did. And so it's very clear that once you get to the second or the third or the fourth round or wherever, whoever you are drafting is likely coming in as a backup quarterback, right? They're coming in as a backup quarterback. And so then I think clubs say, do I want this as a backup quarterback? Do I want a backup quarterback who's going to be getting more attention than my starting quarterback? There's already this obsession with backup quarterbacks who are the most popular person in the city if things are going badly. Got to play the backup. You make that backup Shador with the profile that he has. You know, it's a little bit like, I don't want to relitigate the Colin Kaepernick thing, whether he was blackballed or not. But at some point, like I think the NFL's closed-mindedness, all of this had the political stance he took, all of that had an enormous part of why he was blackballed. But at some point, then it is, do you really want Colin Kaepernick as a backup? Why do you want it? Why do you want that? Right? Do you want? It's like, why do you want to be on Hard Knocks? Why do you want more cameras, more attention, more controversy, more things that could go wrong? And that's very clearly, I think, what happened here is, he's not going to be our starter. Why do we? The truth of the matter is, he would make sense as a backup for the Ravens or for the Bills or for the Chiefs, because there'd be there'd never be a controversy. No one would ever say, why shouldn't, you know, why not? Why isn't Shador starting?
The story's a non-story.
The story becomes a non-story at that point. But for most teams, you know, people said the Dolphins should have picked him, right? Well, if the Dolphins pick him and Tua, you know, whatever, has a bad game, or all of a sudden people are calling for Shador Sanders. So, I think what's really interesting will be, it's clearly all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Had something and a lot to do with this. I think one thing we'll learn is, I'm not sure it's legitimate. Like, NFL teams clearly want yes or no sir guys, right? Humble, yes or no sir, all that stuff, right? And so that's why he fell the way he did. It may be that they wildly overvalued how much any of that stuff matters, right? If he turns out to be an effective quarterback, in this league, which clearly Mel Kiper thinks he will be, everyone will look stupid. They'll look ridiculous. He didn't throw at the combine, and so you let a starter walk out the door? He didn't participate in the Senior Bowl, and he didn't say that, hey, I'm just here to earn a job, and I'm going to start as the fourth string and work my way. And so you let a – in the end, if he is a starting-level quarterback, the NFL is going to look ridiculous, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think with all that in mind, he did kind of end up in maybe the – best possible spot.
I think he ended up in a pretty good spot. Well, it's funny because they had Mike Tannenbaum on the show that precedes this one, and they were discussing which of the quarterbacks who were drafted this year have the greatest chance to start. And obviously, Cam Ward is one. You know, Cam Ward. 100%. Cam Ward will start,
obviously.
But Tannenbaum said he thinks he's number two. That he has a greater chance than Jackson Dart. Tannenbaum said, "I'll be shocked if he starts." Which is just kind of interesting.
Sure.
Just because there's this sense that he's not ready because the Ole Miss system and whatever else. Tyler Shuck, is he going to start? Probably not, depending on the injury situation down there.
Oh, yeah, with Derek Carr.
Right, Milroe's obviously not going to start.
No.
In Seattle. So it's possible. Now, it's weird, though. Why the hell did the Browns pick both of them? Like, that is the weirdest thing ever.
Makes
right?
no sense. If you were going to take him, why didn't you just...
Unless you believe, which was one of the theories that percolated, that Dylan Gabriel was a organizational pick. He's mm-hmm. the guy they wanted. And that Shedeur Sanders was the owner's pick.
Huh.
And that if you see video of when they select Shedeur Sanders, it's not explosively happy, we got our guy leaping out of our chairs video. So... who knows what the hell is kicking around? The truth of the matter is, the odds are he's not going to be great and the NFL won't look stupid. And I only say that not because it's Shedeur Sanders, because most quarterbacks aren't great. Literally most first-round quarterbacks aren't great. So you're probably safer to bet against him than you are for him. But it was certainly gripping. The Mel stuff was, I was reading the piece in The Athletic about this. Because he really lost his mind.
It's kind of ridiculous.
On the other hand, at least the theory in the, they sort of had to talk him down. Like when he was finally drafted, he just goes on another, he's unleashing rants and he may just, like, he said that the NFL, he went on a rant about how bad the NFL is about evaluating quarterbacks. Which is right, like whatever, but he's not so great himself. I once remember he said Jimmy Clausen was going to be the best thing in the whole world. And so Mel has his own misses. But the piece in The Athletic made the point that this was great TV, that no matter how it turns out, Mel Unleashed was sort of, well, what do we care about on day two? Right? Well, what do we really care about on day two and day three, on day three of the draft, and Mel losing his mind is good TV, even if it's ridiculous. Was it good TV?
For day two and day three, I think it was pretty good TV. But on day one, where it felt like he was taking large chunks of these later first-round picks, which are still more than highly valuable picks, like a lot of those picks in that later first round end up being day one plug-and-play type players. Like, for example, who the Eagles picked up, the linebacker from Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah,
it would not shock me at all if he ends up playing right away.
No, the injury issue was, you know, one of the things that infuriated me was that is that the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Eagles, all three at the end of the first round, just have guys fall into their laps. And it's what they do,
studs.
Though. The Ravens do it every single time. They just wait to see who the best player is who falls to them. The Chiefs, it also totally fit their need. You know, last year they needed a blazing fast wide receiver. Now they had to go up and get him. They did this year too. They went up one spot to get Simmons, the tackle. Mm-hmm. They needed a tackle. Maybe the most gifted, again, injury issues, maybe the most gifted tackle. But as a TV viewer, I get your point. Like, those are all worthy picks who are Malachi Stark going to the Ravens we should be focusing on that. Scares me too. It's not like they needed a all pro safety.
Yeah.
And yet, is it great TV? Like, isn't Mel losing his mind better TV? I think it probably is, even if you're infuriated by Mel losing his mind. Come on, shut up, Mel. That may be more interesting. All right, other things in the draft. Oh, we also didn't discuss the prank calls, the prank call stuff. And this was not, by the way, just Shedeur Sanders. That's one's gotten all the attention because Jeff Ulbrich, who is the defensive coordinator for the Falcons, he left. So Shedeur Sanders goes out and he gets a phone specifically for the draft, has a number set up specifically for the draft to avoid this problem, which is, by the way, pro move, right?
Yeah, no problems there.
And
it's awesome. Smart.
And Jeff Ulbrich evidently leaves. Do you believe the story? I think I believe the story. Leaves his iPad open or whatever, and there is the phone number, and his 21-year-old knucklehead son comes along and gets the phone number, and so then pranks call saying he is Mickey Loomis, the GM of the Saints, and that they're going to be taking Shedeur Sanders. It's a jackass move. It's a knucklehead, stupid jackass. You know, and but it's not just like there were others. The Bills drafted an offensive lineman in the fifth or sixth round from UConn, whose name currently escapes me. And he got multiple prank calls from GMs during the week and others during the weekend and others did as well. What the hell is wrong with people? Is that funny?
It's not the prank calls aren't what's funny to me. It's the thought of why are these people going out of their way to like insert themselves in what should be a, you know, one of the happiest days of these young athletes' lives.
You're 26, so you grew up like when I'm 63, and so when I grew up, prank calls were a thing you'd do. You know, is your refrigerator running? You better go turn it off. You know, do you have Prince Albert in a can? Let him out before he suffocates. You'd call whatever. Prank calls were
a gag. It was just a joke.
People did, and they, if you're calling your local pharmacy to ask, you know, some prank call, this is, have prank calls gone away? I think they've gone away because who picks up the phone? There are no prank calls anymore. I mean, generally speaking, you can't prank call, right?
Generally speaking, you know, at some point, sure, at some point when I was, you know, even younger, of course.
Did you participate in a prank call?
Maybe once or twice, but at that point, there was still caller ID. We were having to try and find workarounds for caller ID.
The only time you can actually make a prank call, it seems to me now, is if you're prank calling someone who's about to be drafted, because they have to answer the phone from unknown numbers. Like, they can't, like, I'm not going to take that call. Spam alert. No, they're not going to do it. Could be the Bills, right? Like, and so, because who knows? Who knows where the hell they're calling from? And so you have to answer. It's the only time you can still prank someone, but it is just aggressively mean. Because this is not, is your refrigerator running? And then you feel a little bit like an idiot. This is literally the guy's livelihood, the moment that he's worked his whole life for, and you're prank calling. What the hell is wrong with you? That's miserable. So there you go.
And you asked if I could believe it as a Jets fan, knowing Jeff Ulbrich left his iPad unlocked on the tie table. Yes, I can believe that.
All right, so onward we go. The Memphis Tigers. I sadly had Tiger fan was emailing me last week after watching Seth Hennigan, do the quarterback
the Gruden thing.
Yeah. And he said, that guy's going to get drafted on this alone. He said fourth round. And I said, I'm sorry. I hate to disappoint you. He is not absolutely not going to be drafted in the fourth round. And I will be surprised if he gets drafted. So I hate to say I told you so today because that guy put in 4 years at the University of Memphis. I would have loved to see him get his name called in the end. And this is true. That's what they say. You do get to pick your spot. And so I'm sure he got a little bonus money. He ended up in Jacksonville where he will. I won't at all be surprised. I'll make a more optimistic prediction. Won't at all be surprised if he ends up, on the practice squad. Do they call it the practice squad now? That he ends up on the roster as a third quarterback this year. Other Memphis Tigers who ended up elsewhere, Julian Barnett went to the Seahawks. Damir Blankensee went to the Pats. Trent Holler to the Giants. Anthony Lamphere to the Bucks. Chandler Martin I hate to see a good kid end up with the Ravens, but there you go. Davion Ross with the Titans. Rock Taylor, a little surprised he wasn't drafted towards the end, at least, of the draft. Joins Calvin Austin with the Steelers, and Tristan Vandenberg goes to the Titans. So there you go. It is funny. Like, there's all this attention on Shedeur Sanders dropping, as there should be. Quinn Ewers, seventh round to Miami. And the question there is, did he make a mistake? Obviously, Arch Manning was going to be the quarterback in Texas this year. Did he make a mistake given that he could have done what Cam did the previous year, could have transferred somewhere and made, and we're seeing it right now. You don't think Tennessee could use him? You know, like, could be making $3-4 million a year as a college quarterback. Was he right to bet on himself? If you were Quinn Ewers today, would you be kicking yourself for not staying and making more NIL money?
I think so. My only thing with that is I don't know what, not, we don't know what he was hearing pre-draft, what his pre-draft kind of thought process was. What were people feeding him? Were they saying, oh, you know, you've got this skill set, you've done this in college, we're expecting you to go here, and then he ends up in the seventh round. We don't know what he was hearing ahead of the draft. I would not have expected him to go much higher than where he did. I think Miami's actually a pretty good spot for him. They need a backup quarterback. I mean, it's Quinn Ewers and Zach Wilson back there behind Tua.
Right.
We all know how that probably right. would end up.
He could end up as a third. He could end up as a third quarterback, much like Seth in Jacksonville. On the Jackson Dart thing, by the way, Bruce Feldman didn't love the pick. Interesting. Didn't love it in the first round. Didn't sure. love Giants coming back up and getting him in the first round. He said, here's why I'm skeptical. He played a lot of football in college. He had a very talented team around him last year. All they needed to do was beat a 5-5 Florida team and a really bad Mississippi State team, and the Rebels make the college football playoff. But Dart and the Rebels really struggled against Florida. 8 of 18, 2 interceptions, 3 sacks in the second half when Ole Miss scored just 3 points. And the Rebels' 3 losses in 2024, all against teams that finished unranked. He led them to 1 total touchdown in the second half of those 3 games. Is that fair criticism or not? You went to Ole Miss.
Yeah, and still attend as many of those games as I can get down to if I'm not working. It's certainly fair criticism, but to just kind of boil his resume down to that.
To a half.
To, you know, one half of football or 2 or 3 halves of football, I think kind of is, in a way, disrespectful, isn't it? Because then you saw the rest of his season where he became one of the most productive quarterbacks in school history. And then look at even last year, the game with LSU in Oxford was electric. I mean, back and forth with Jaden Daniels, who just won Rookie of the Year.
Right.
And, I mean, what was the final score of the game, like 55-52 or something
The other interesting thing with the Giants is if he doesn't help that administration staff and the GM and head coach keep their jobs this year, he could be in the awkward situation where he's been drafted by one group and then they get canned and he's not the next group's quarterback. And if the Giants stink this year, they'll be, you know, it might be one of these deals where they're immediately drafting a quarterback over him. By the way, how about this? Not only did Kobe Miner, the defensive back for the University of Memphis, not only was he the last player picked, and so he was Mr. Irrelevant yesterday. I left him out of my recounting of what Memphis players ended up at other places. So he's Mr. Irrelevant here, too. But Kobe Miner, Mr. Irrelevant, goes to the Pats. So that was good. Any other drafts that stuck out to you as either good or insane?
The one that's still really questionable to me is the Browns picking 2 quarterbacks when they already have 3 on their roster. But other than that, I mean, the top of the draft, apart from the trade, felt pretty chalky. There were a couple interesting picks through the first round, but none really stick out to me as, man, they just did a horrible job.
I kind of love what the Browns did generally. They obviously, you know, traded out of Travis Hunter, and so they ended up with the extra pick next year. Jacksonville could miss the playoffs this year. Yeah, yeah. That could be a valuable first-round pick. They end up with Mason Graham and the linebacker from UCLA, and then Quinshon Judkins and Dylan Sampson, who I like combination as running backs there. You know, they're, I think, pretty set on being bad this year. So what the hell? Like, I wouldn't even care if they just rotated Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel. That would be fun. That would be more fun than recent Browns season have been. So I didn't hate that at all. I thought Atlanta giving up an extra first.
That wasn't great.
To go up and, to go up and get another pass rusher, Tennessee. Wasn't great. Yeah, wasn't great. Pierce. I didn't like that Mike Green, the Ravens, infuriated me because they got Mike Green, who led the country in sacks, I think, at Marshall.
Yeah,
they got
right.
him in the second round because of various sexual assault type allegations.
I was going to say, those are fair off-field question marks.
But what's funny is fans love it. Like, yeah, drop to us because of, you know. So fans seem to love that. And I thought New England did. I'll have Sam Hardiman in here Wednesday. I thought New England did a great job with Will Campbell, Trevion Henderson,
yeah.
Kyle Williams. They got the defensive tackle from Florida State, Joshua Farmer, and on and on and on. Four of their top 100 picks, four picks in the top 100, all offense, which makes sense to put around Drake May. So anyway, it was obviously it will always be known as the Shedeur Sanders draft, and now we get to see how that turns out. All right, it's going to be a full day of, I'm sure, Grizzlies talk here on 92.9. We got to get out of here. What's coming up next? Calkins Show.
All right, Jeff, we've got you coming up at 1:25 with Jason John. Jason Munns joins myself and Jeffrey. David Cobb at 5 o'clock joining Gabe Kuhn.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow. For now, work is done.